So, well, I mean, I was going to take the load with me on my way to Valley Recycling since I had to go to Valley Recycling to go to Cairns for cancer from a 12 to 3 shift anyway. But I was still trying to stick that load of brush on the trailer when time was ticking. So I just left it, trailer brush, right in the customer's driveway. Then I had to come to my radio show. Well, I guess the brush was sitting there for all week or two. Couple weeks already, I think. Not on a trailer, so hopefully they don't mind it sitting on a trailer for a few more hours or another day. Another day. Yeah, Valley Recycling is closed tomorrow, Saturday. They usually open on Saturday. I hoped maybe I could take it tomorrow, but I forgot that Valley Recycling is closed then too. Oh well. You're listening to Out There. I'm your host, Ruthie. You think I'd learn time management? Time management. And today is Friday, August 16th, 2024. For today's show, I have a continuation from last week's interview with Gwen Nabod. Gwen Nabod is the chair of the Northampton Housing Partnership and was talking about her time living in Hampshire Heights, one of the Northampton Housing Authority buildings, and some challenges with management there. I think I'll save that interview for the second half of the show. And for the first half, I guess. Oh, I also have an interview with Jacob and Jasmine, who work as mechanics with Valley Bike Share. Valley Bike Share came back in action this week, and there was the opening, grand opening in Pulaski Park Monday at noon. So I have some interviews from there. And I guess we'll start with myself. So it's Monday morning, the 12th of August, 2024. I'm doing my downtown trash route. I had heard and read that the Valley Bike Share program was going to be coming back, and on my ride here this morning, downtown Florence, in front of Cooper's Corner, three bikes in the Valley Bike Share rack, first bikes that have been there for, I don't know, a year and a half or something. And then coming on down by Cooley Dickinson, bikes in the rack. In front of Northampton High School, bikes in the rack. Smith College, bikes in the rack. Pulaski Park, bikes in the rack. Down behind Deals and Steals, bikes in the rack. It's just like waking up on Christmas morning and your stocking's full. Okay, here's another tidbit I have to share. So you know how I've been talking about my new friend, old friend. So I told this story about him on stage for a Valley Voices story slam back in January. It was called Manufactured Desire, about my friend Waldo, who drives a truck for USA Waste. Well, so Waldo is the anonymous name I gave him because we'd always run into each other around town, so I thought it was a funny anonymous name. And so my friend there, so we've been becoming more friendly and hanging out. Yesterday we went for a bike ride, our second bike ride ever. It's very nice. But we went to Westbrook up in Whately Hatfield, and we were standing in the brook under the waterfall just talking trash. We're always talking trash. And he says to me, "Hey, you know Carlos?" And he usually drives around with Waldo. And I was like, "Waldo?" And my friend said, "Yeah. He's always eating mangoes. He's from some other country. He doesn't speak much English." And I said, "Wait, there's actually a USA driver named Waldo?" And my friend was like, "Yeah." And I thought, "Oh, are you kidding me?" This whole time, I told this story on stage, on the archives, online, about my friend who drives for USA, and I gave him this nickname of Waldo, trying to make it anonymous and protect him. And meanwhile, I've like implicated this poor USA driver who's actually named Waldo, who doesn't even speak much English. Oh, I'm sorry. So yesterday evening, after I got back from my bike ride with my friend, my special friend, I can't call him Waldo anymore because that name's taken. I have to come up with some other anonymous name. I just call him my driver because that's what my housemate Alex has called him for me, in front of me, teasingly. So I got back from the ride and I said, "Hey Alex, I just got back from a bike ride with my driver. Guess what
stage of our relationship we got to this evening. Alex says, what? I said, he gave me the combination to his bike lock. And Alex said, whoa, that's like third base for you. Sorry for the noise, I'm doing downtown trash, and that's the downtown trash compactor. So 2 or 3 weeks ago, a friend of mine who is, I met through Couchsurfing, but we're friends, he's 21, he was staying with us, and it was after I had gone on a bike ride with my driver, and when we had parted ways, me and my driver, we gave a fist bump instead of a hug, because with that, so, you know, we were trying to figure out our relationship, and so I told my 21-year-old Couchsurfing guest kind of about that dynamic of sort of like wanting more, but not sure how, not being like shy or not sure how fast. And my couch surfing friend said something like, the puritanical values, cultural values run deep or something like that. And I thought, my friend, this is not puritanical cultural values and inhibitions. No, my friend, this, my friend, is called courting. It's called courting. You know, just because you can jump in the sack with someone doesn't mean you should or that I want to or... I like to ride the wave. I like to take my time. I like the guessing game.
All right, yes, my friends, you are listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I am not going to tell you my host name because that was a little bit embarrassing, that piece there. We'll move on. Next, we have Valley Bike Share.
It is Monday, August 12th, 2024. I'm here at the Valley Bike Share grand reopening. Is that what that is?
Yep, grand reopening. Relaunch.
Relaunch, okay. Yep. And what's your name?
Jacob Cancel.
And how are you involved in Valley Bike Share?
I'm a driving technician, so I go around and service the bikes and stations.
Oh, cool. And you worked for them before they shut down for the last year or so. How long were they shut down for?
About a year and a half.
How long had you worked for them before that?
2-3 years before that, I'd started helping, just bringing bikes to the new warehouse when the cities had first bought them.
Uh-huh.
And then, I basically just got into it then as a seasonal worker during school.
Okay.
Because I was a high schooler at the time. So I was just working in the summers.
Uh-huh.
It was a good summer job.
Uh-huh.
And then they went bankrupt, the company that was servicing the bikes. And so I got a new job, and then when I found out that they had found Drop Mobility, the new people that are maintaining the bikes, I had obviously put in my application right away, and with prior experience, they took me really quickly, and yeah, it's been great. We got all the old bikes back. We have them out on the streets working, and then Drop Mobility is bringing in their new bikes that are going to be totally updated and way better for the users.
What's the difference?
So the older version of them they're a lot bigger. They have that big frame in the middle. It makes it really clunky and a little bit hard to maneuver.
Yeah.
You can't make very good turns. But the new bikes, it's just a one battery strip in the middle that we just pop in and can pop out. And that allows the bikes to be a lot lighter and easier to handle. And then there's a bunch of little features that they added. The baskets are better. There's a cup holder in the basket, a little spot to hold your phone in the basket. So there's just little things like that.
Does that prevent people from holding their friends in the basket?
I don't think so. We'll try to tell people not to, but
good luck with that. So when I was riding into town this morning, like I saw bikes coming from Florence. I saw bikes like in Florence, you know, in front of Fleet Dick, in front of the high school, coming on down.
Yeah.
When did they get put in the docks?
Yeah, so we actually, our team that's here today, about five of us, we went out this weekend, last 2 days, and just put out all the bikes we had in the warehouse. So we took two big 20-foot U-Hauls and dispersed them throughout the cities.
Wow.
It took us all day the last 2 days.
Wow. Do you know how many bikes there are in Northampton?
In just Northampton, I believe there's around 100,
okay,
a little bit more.
And are you doing, do you work on bikes in the whole region?
Yep,
you know
whole
how many,
region.
Like how many are in the system?
The system, it's about 350.
Okay. And do they all come through the Florence warehouse for servicing?
Yeah, so we actually moved our warehouse from Florence. It was in Florence with the last company, and we found a new warehouse in Holyoke.
Okay.
So yeah, so we're based in, our warehouse is based in Holyoke, and that's where we do most of the repairs.
Okay. So the new bikes, they have the battery strip. That means they don't need a dock?
No. So we're going to be putting in new stations, and they're going to be like a normal bike rack rather than docks. And you can just put it with the secondary lock, like a little, just like a normal bike.
So then how, I'm sure it's all electronic, like how do you know, so you got to go around and collect batteries or what?
Yeah, so what we're going to end up doing is there's going to, of course, be some people that don't want to bring them back to their stations and just leave them wherever. So we'll have to go get those ones and bring them back to stations. And then the batteries will be actually a lot easier because the docks, we had a lot of problems with docks and the electricity coming from the ground. So this will actually be a lot easier because we can just charge the battery strips at the warehouse. And when we go out during the day, we just bring a bunch of batteries with us and swap them out. So we just boop, take out one battery, put a new battery in, that bike's all set to go.
Okay. And Drop, what's their name?
Drop Mobility.
Where are they out of?
They're based out of Canada. Uh-huh. Yeah, they're a company out of Canada, and they do a whole bunch of these around the country, actually. They take old bike operations and kind of revamp them with their new bikes.
Oh. So how many hours a week are you doing Valley Bike?
Full-time, so full-time. 40 hours,
okay.
Yeah.
So what did you do? What have you been doing till you started out this again?
Yeah, so right now it's actually been a lot of work actually trying to get out all of the messed up stuff from the last rotation of bikes, because they obviously took them out because the other company went bankrupt. So they took all the bikes out and just left all the stuff out. So it's all been unserviced for the last almost 2 years in the weather and all that. And so we've basically just been going around having to fix just about every station so that the bikes can be good to dock there.
You've been busy.
Very busy.
Wow, cool. Well, thanks a lot for your work. How optimistic do you feel about the future of Valley Bike?
Super optimistic. I mean, I'm super excited with these new bikes. I think everyone's going to love them. I think we'll get a lot more people riding them, and I think that'll just help it grow even more.
Well, thanks a lot, Jacob.
Yeah, of course.
Hi, I'm Jasmine Buontello. What do you do with Valley Bike? I am a bike mechanic.
How long have you been with Valley Bike?
A few years now.
How did you start?
I originally started through some family members that were working there. I saw what a great job they were doing, and it looked like a lot of fun. So I just kind of got my foot in the door, and I ended up really liking it.
So then when Bewegen went bankrupt, like, what did you do?
Luckily, I also have my own business outside of this. I clean houses. So I just kind of stuck to that. And then once this came back, I was like, oh, I need to work this into my schedule again.
How many hours a week are you doing with bike mechanic?
I do it 3 days a week, 9 to 5. So part-time. It's a really great job to get outside.
So you're outside. Like, what are you actually doing?
I service the stations, so I go around, I maintain them, make sure they're working, looking nice. If the bikes need any repairs, I try to do any repairs I can on site.
Okay.
Yeah. And then if, you know, sometimes stations get too full up, so we'll move some of the bikes to other stations.
All right.
Just handiwork like that.
So in the in-between time, when Bewegen went bankrupt, did you think about like trying to get a job as a bike mechanic at a bike shop?
It did cross my mind. I didn't really have the time almost to do that. It happened pretty quickly. I feel like the bikes were back. Uh-huh. Not fully out, but I knew that things were being worked on.
Yeah, Jacob said there was a lot of prep work to get to where they are today.
So we knew that they were coming out before they actually did. So I was like, I'm saving myself for
So it's mid-August right now. When did you start back with Valley Bike?
I personally started in July, so not very long, but I knew I was going to be signing on before that.
Yeah. And your other job, the other business, are you still trying to do both, or did you just...
Yes, I've somehow managed to fit them both into my schedule. It's a little chaotic, but it's working so far.
And so are you, so the shop is in Holyoke now. Are you servicing bikes like all over the different towns where they are, or are you based mostly in one town?
Yeah, so we have a handful of drivers who go out and they service stations. We'll usually split it up between us, you know, what sections we're doing. But for the most part, I will get to every station at some point in the week. Fried Valley Bike.
There's just one catch. You have to have a QR code reader to unlock the bikes, is what I am told. And the fob technology, like before I had a fob, a little, you know, a little plastic disc about the size of a button battery, big button battery, that I could unlock bikes with. They said that technology, the guy said, it didn't pay itself forward, or something along those lines. I forget. Thanks for listening to Out There. That was an interview with Jacob Cancel and Jasmine, I forget her name, of Valley Bike Share. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie. Coming up, we have, Annie Lennox. Music. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie. Out There airs Fridays from 4 to 5 on WXOJLP 103.3 FM in Northampton. Before I go to the interview with Gwen Nabad, I have a little story of the week. I don't think I told this one on Out There last week. When did this happen? I can't remember. One day within the last week or so, it was actually like 3:45 in the morning. I woke up and I had to pee, so I went outside and I was standing in the wood chips in the backyard. And that night, it was one of the nights of the Pleiades. The sky was so bright. And I did what I had to do, and I was admiring the stars. I could see the different constellations and all. And then I saw a shooting star. And then I was looking at Cassiopeia, and the other sort of constellations looked kind of like a boat with a little cluster of stars on the end. Then I saw another shooting star, and I was just like mesmerized, just looking up there. And then suddenly I felt something on my toe, something nibbling my toe, and my bare feet. And I looked down, and there was a skunk. There was a skunk nibbling my toe. And in that instant, I was like, do I move slowly to hopefully not get sprayed? Or do I run for my life before my toe gets bit? So, of course, impulsively, I moved my foot away from the mouth of that skunk as quickly as possible. The skunk followed kind of like a dog on a bone. And then I just like leapt for the back door, ran, jumped, stumbled, tripped, knocked the mop off the laundry line, knocked things here and there, clitter clatter, and I jumped in the back door with this, I imagine, this gigantic waft of skunk spray millimeters behind me. But it never sprayed. And my foot didn't even smell like skunk. It was amazing. I don't know why it was interested in my toe. I felt lucky. Then I went back outside and saw another shooting star. All right, now we have Gwen Nabad. I played the first half of this interview with Gwen last Friday. That would have been August 9th. But since I'm so behind on updating the archives, the only archives currently that you could hear the first half of Gwen's show on is the Valley Free Radio internal archives on the Valley Free Radio website, not really internal. But it's not on the out there archives yet. Hopefully one of these days, maybe in winter, I'll catch up on computer work. All right, so this interview is with Gwen from the beginning of August. I went to Gwen's new place at Hathaway Farms, which is no longer at Northampton Housing Authority's Hampshire Heights complex. And I can't remember, we're just in the middle of something. Gwen had, well, I guess I'm just going to have to play it and we'll figure out where we are.
It was kind of like everything. So when I say I felt like she didn't like my kind, it was literally my entire identity that I felt like she was trashing.
So what happened to your garden?
So I use gardening as a form of therapy. I'm a neurodiverse individual. I was diagnosed while I was just before I went to HCC, I was officially diagnosed. And I was like, I knew it. I knew there was a reason I was so hyper all my life. I knew it. You know, I'm an outdoor kid. And my way of thinking is kind of like expansive, but I have a way of like putting a lot of random things together into one place. Like, so my thinking isn't always, I guess you would say my methods of arriving at things are a little different. And also I experienced tremendous childhood trauma, which gets locked into your body. And I also am a survivor of domestic violence. And also I'm in recovery. So the gardens were my medicine, and I got letters from a neuropsychologist. I got letters from my primary care. I got letters from past providers who were treating me and my daughter when we were going through this whole homelessness thing, that I needed to have my gardens, and she just would not do that.
Like, were you there when people came?
What she tried to do was she said, okay, well, I'm not going to deny it all the way. You can have a garden in the back. And in the back, it was all, like, deep shade, and there was no way that I could grow a lot of these medicines. You know, it also wasn't accessible. It was like I had to go down back through a basement door. The basement was flooding and had mold in it and things like that. So... yeah, she made it really difficult for me to get what I needed. And in addition to that, I kind of was in school, and I was kind of feeling like my garden was kind of a display of my work, the thing that I've been doing all my life, which is like healing pollinator systems, you know, working with native plants and things like that. And also a good part of that is like regenerating the soil. So like sunflowers take up tremendous amounts of heavy metals from the ground. It can take a few years to clear a site. So I was like working on that, you know.
Were you there when it was destroyed, or did you come home and find it, or what?
Okay, so then what happened was, so I was refusing to accept her alternative offer for my reasonable accommodation because it wasn't giving me what I needed. It also meant that I was going to have to disrupt all of my projects and everything. And so during the new recertification for that year, I reapplied for a reasonable accommodation again, provided the paperwork from providers, and she said, I already told you what I'll do, and you're allowed to have a garden in the back. And she said, maintenance will be there Monday morning to remove your gardens. And I caught it all on video as they, plant by plant, ripped out each and every plant and took it out back down to the bottom of a steep hill and dumped it.
Do you have any relationship with maintenance workers?
Not really. I know some people do. And I mean, to tell you the truth, I do really like a lot of the maintenance guys, and they have, I don't know if I can say this, but I'll just say without mentioning any specifics, but you know, they certainly have come to me since then and expressed remorse and talked about the fear of, you know, losing their jobs or, they call it something when workers don't want to comply. Mm-hmm. You know, the whole time they were removing it, they were saying things like, this is exactly how it should look here. Like, mm-hmm. This is the way it's supposed to look.
Insubordination,
that's it, yes. And so, you know, they wanted to preserve their jobs. In fact, one worker talked about how he's Algonquin, and he felt terrible about removing that garden. Yeah. Yeah.
So you continued to live at Hampshire Heights for a few more years? How much longer?
Yeah, so since that episode, I definitely took action on that, and it ultimately led to me finally being able to get what I need by moving out with a HCV voucher. Yeah.
What's that?
Housing choice voucher. Yeah, HCV. So it's basically Section 8. It's federal. There are different types of vouchers. You know, some vouchers are federal, some are state. You can use these vouchers in a multitude of ways, which I was amazed to find out about. Certain participating housing authorities can choose to participate in programs that can help you with, you know, buying a home. So I think that's incredible, because the goal would be to secure housing over the long term for people and families and to build generational wealth. Yeah.
So now you're at Hathaway Farms, which literally like shares a fence with Hampshire Heights, right?
Yes.
How is it?
So it's incredible. So I've gone from feeling like I'm living in a heat pad. That's the other thing, was how they removed. So what had happened was, during the King Street reconstruction and everything, I lived right at that intersection, and it was like every day there were like these construction trucks, and there was an old oak tree there. It was a huge, old, beautiful oak tree. And she, now she has denied this. However, I did call the city, and the city forestry department told me that if it was MassDOT, they would have had to go to the city and let them know that they were going to remove this 100-year-old oak tree. But during that, I went to a public meeting, and I said, I'm really, really worried about the oak tree, and I hope it doesn't get removed. And exactly 6 months later, that oak tree was getting cut down. And the reason I feel personally, maybe it's just me looking too much into it, maybe it's just my own speculation, but this to me was another act of retaliation against me personally. Like, I felt like really personally hurt by that. And so I suspect that it was housing, because the city said, no, technically that's housing property, so only they could have decided to remove that tree. So that was another tree. And even before that, like in 2020, they had removed like 3 or 4 trees that were dying. And I mean, that's an important thing. Like, why are they dying? You know, what's going on with the soil there? But anyway, they had already removed a multitude of trees, and there were no new trees going back up. And so, anyway, that leads to the next thing, whereby I end up getting extremely, extremely, like, fortunate to come in at the right time to get this apartment at Hathaway Farms, and it's just like a universe away. It's literally on the other side of the fence, and it's just like a universe away. Instead of like having our lawns mowed every day down to the dirt and having dust blown everywhere, it's like everybody that lives here knows Tuesday's landscaping day. Another difference is like they're open to alternatives from using chemical pesticides and things like that, so they're really open about that. There's a lot of trees here. It's very peaceful here. One of the terrible decisions that the NHA made was to situate an office within every neighborhood in Northampton. And I lived right next to the office. So there was constantly like maintenance workers coming in and out, people just randomly showing up and coming for applications. I ended up getting a Ring doorbell and paying for a little service so I could keep an eye on things. And another side effect of living right next to the office was sometimes people thinking that I worked there. So, which I love my people, I love my neighbors, I love them all so much. And like when people needed help, I totally wanted to help them. You know, I've been able to like learn a lot about a lot of different resources over my life as a single mom for the past 37 years. So, you know, I really do enjoy helping people and inspiring people. You know, even that, you know, there was a lot of interference and friendships by the administration. So, for example, a tenant approached me at one point and said, I went to the office to do my research and they told me this about you. It's just so unprofessional and inhumane, and that developed a fear for other people getting to know me, who I really am, or, you know, wanting to be seen talking to me, or, you know, there's just no privacy there. There's no privacy. Everything is just exposed. coming to Hathaway is such a contrast. It's peaceful. It's, you know, I have my own little area back here in my patio where I can sit outside and, you know, do my worm farming and, you know, grow my medicinal herbs and things like that and preserve them and make things out of them. And I still have my two plots at Grove Food Northampton, so yeah.
You're also part of the Northampton Housing Partnership?
Oh, yes. So I joined the partnership, I want to say during the COVID, or I can't remember, but I've been there for a couple years now. And so the Housing Partnership, the mission has kind of morphed over the years. Like, I think initially, you know, there was a lot more involved around fair housing and, like, a lot of the issues that were coming in at the time with public housing. There was a woman named Peg who I didn't know personally, and I never met her, but I've looked back on the old notes and the old minutes, and she was doing a lot of really good work with people in housing and housing equity and tenant rights and things like that. So there is an element of the fair housing piece. And then as a member of the partnership, I do attend conferences like the Western Mass Coalition Against Homelessness. Just had a huge convention at Holyoke Community College to talk about the housing bond bill and also talk about some of the issues that people are facing here and in the surrounding communities, for example, about equity theft. And so now the Housing Partnership deals with low and moderate housing, the building of it, the creation of it, the we regularly have meetings with Pamela, who comes into our meetings quite a lot from Pioneer Valley, and she just kind of listens in, or she comes in and fills us in, for example, on the new Bridge Street affordable housing complex that's being built, or Bridge Road.
By Hatfield Street, yeah.
And so that's a long drawn out process, because when it comes to building housing like that, a lot of their funding is coming from very different sources, and so they have to, like, you know, it's not as straightforward as, you know, luxury contractor building or something like that. So yeah, so we do a lot of stuff like that. And one of the big things that we're working on right now is really, really hoping to get the Massachusetts Affordable Housing Trust Fund back. Northampton actually does have an Affordable Housing Trust Fund, but it's been dormant. Mm-hmm. And ironically, the reason why it was created was because where I live now used to be all low income. It was originally built as affordable housing, and then I think after 17 years, you know, that restriction left, and then there was new management that took over, so it started becoming more of a high-end sort of apartment complex. I would say the rents are pretty high. I mean, you know, they're pretty high to live here. But so Hathaway, so the reason why the Affordable Housing Trust Fund was in the first place was because the new owners or the new management agreed to keep a certain number of units for Section 8. Mm-hmm. So in the process of that whole thing, there were families that were allowed to stay here, and they didn't have to move out or leave or get pushed out, mm-hmm. because of increased rent. Mm-hmm. And so this is mixed income, which I think is great. I meet a lot of interesting people here. There are people living here that are kind of like in two places at once, like nurses or doctors or federal workers or whatever. And like, I just met somebody who has one home in Mansfield, and then they also have the apartment here to go back and forth, him and his wife, for work. I'm not sure what they do, but
yeah, that's interesting, because like when I often think about you know, housing difficulties, challenges in Northampton, the price of housing, all that.
and how there's so much empty housing in Northampton.
Yes, yes.
Like, for so many reasons, whether it's Airbnb or people live alone because they're just used to living alone and living with other people. People have a hard time living with each other anymore. Like, there is all this space, and we keep on cutting down trees to build more housing for fewer people.
Right.
When you look at the square footage or the per person footage.
Yeah. You know, I have a really hard time with the concept of wood-framed houses in New England. I just don't understand it. it's kind of an odd thing. While I was in Costa Rica last fall, a lot of the homes are built, the frames themselves are made of very, very hard wood, but that the rest of the house is built out of like concrete and like you know, like some kind of a mixture of clay and concrete. Yeah. And it's really hot down there, but the houses stay cool. Mm-hmm. So you don't need AC, you don't need all that. And I understand it's a different climate, but you know, I don't know. I have ideas for creating different types of housing that are more logical. Mm-hmm. For mm-hmm. example, you know, if we were building kind of like more underground, we'd be getting mm-hmm. some of that geothermal stuff going on. And, you know, it's like we have these big boxes that stand up against the wind and stuff like that and the elements. And I think, you know, that causes us to have to use more energy to cool and heat and stuff.
Yeah.
Now, what's interesting is the brick here doesn't bother me as much as it did at Hampshire Heights. Like, I think it's just because shrubbery is allowed. You know, there's a breaking up of it. You know, it's broken up by trees and shrubs, and, you know, it's somehow, I don't know, maybe more artfully done. I mean, you know, I don't know, but it doesn't bother me quite like that did. Yeah.
So earlier in the conversation, you mentioned going back to college while your daughter went to college, and you recently graduated, right?
Yeah, so my first bout of college, early in life, I went to nursing school, and I did like almost 3 years in an accelerated nursing program. Through Framingham Union Hospital School of Nursing in Framingham State. And because I was a single mom and I was working and I was pounding the pavement, running my own contracting businesses and stuff like that, I just never thought of, I didn't think it was possible for me to go back to school, but yeah, so I went back to college. And I had no idea, like, I was like, well, I took a lot of microbiologies and chemistries and anatomy and physiologies, so maybe I should focus on that. And they said, well, those medical credits are only good for 7 or 8 years, so we won't be able to take those. But we can take the other stuff, like your first couple of years of electives and things like that. And I was like, okay. So, yeah, I got very involved at Holyoke Community College. I was involved. I sat on the Indigenous Peoples Committee. I served on Student Senate. I went to like a lot of like really wonderful and amazing events that HCC held, you know, the International Fair, and because I understand my style of learning now, I really, really excelled. I ended up being high honors. I think my final GPA was like a 3.87 or something like that. Not perfect, mm-hmm. but I kind of did that on purpose. I was like, okay, I don't have to be perfect, and I'm just not going to get a perfect score. Mm-hmm. And so I got inducted into PTK, which is Community College, Phi Theta Kappa program. There's all kinds of resources you can use for, like, you know, how to write your graduate program letter and things like that. So, you know, how to write an essay to get into better colleges. And so there were, like, things that I was inducted into the National Society of Leadership and Success. And so that resource provided me with a lot of leadership training and workshopping and things like that with other student leaders. Mm-hmm. And that was really, really amazing. Serving on Student Senate taught me a lot about Robert's Rules. and I had to learn that, you know. I was like, kind of like, why do we have to, like, you know, why do we have to do it this way? Can't we just kind of go around in a circle? And, you know, it was, and a lot of times I have felt like that, but in other ways, like, I think this is what makes me a little bit of a moderate, is I do kind of like to have things in a certain order. Uh-huh. But yeah, so I ended up doing really well at Holyoke Community College and meeting the most beautiful people, the most beautiful young people, the most inspiring, and connecting with people. And I ended up getting a really tremendous scholarship that enabled me to choose to go to Hampshire College. Yeah. So, because of my GPA and things like that, other leadership stuff, I got accepted at Hampshire College, and I made a decision to just go there. And I was totally immersed in it while I was there. Yeah.
Do you mind me asking how old you are?
Okay. So I was born in 1969. So I was a little girl during, you know, the 70s, and then I was a teenager during the 80s, and then I was like, and I became a mom really young. I was 17 when I got pregnant and married to a much older man, and I've been through a lot.
Yeah. In other words, you're not a 21-year-old Hampshire College.
I'm totally not. So I'm 54 now, and I finally graduated from college, and I'm just like, okay, well, what am I going to do? Like, could I see myself sitting in an office working for someone else, when I've always been kind of like this entrepreneurial type of person who's run my own businesses and been an outdoor kid? I think I would find that really restrictive, so I'm continuing to just sort of do, like, a lot of, you know, not a lot, but some volunteer stuff, serving in the city, basically growing and producing food and bringing it to the people I love and anyone who needs it and stuff like that, so.
My time, I'm gonna have to go.
Okay.
We didn't get a chance to talk about many things, like the shared abundance garden that you have here.
Right.
Can you give like a quick sentence or two about Shared Abundance?
So Shared Abundance Gardens is a program that was developed by Neely during the COVID. It was a way for people to be able to grow food and share it with others. So it's kind of almost like a guerrilla gardening type concept.
Through Abundance Farm.
Through Abundance Farm.
Yeah, so also connected with the synagogue.
Also connected with the synagogue and CBI. And what you do is you pay in, and then they buy, like, a lot of compost, mm-hmm. and all of the, they do the seedlings and things like that. So you buy into the program, and then you turn around and grow gardens for anyone to harvest from. So it's really cool.
Well, thanks a lot, Gwen. I really appreciate you sharing, and we'll have to talk more soon.
Thank you so much, Ruthie.
And I'll see you at the garden or around.
I'll see you in the garden.
And that was Gwen Nabod, who's chair of the Northampton Housing Partnership. The Northampton Housing Partnership is an 11-member mayoral-appointed volunteer board created in 1991. That's charged with identifying and addressing the city's housing needs, particularly for households with low and moderate incomes. The Housing Partnership assists with efforts to preserve existing affordable housing stock and supports initiatives to create new housing opportunities. And it's staffed by the Office of Planning and Sustainability. So that was Gwen talking about her experience at Hampshire Heights and with the Northampton Housing Authority. Kara Leeper, that's the Executive Director of the Northampton Housing Authority. And you're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm Ruthie. Also coming up on Saturday, that's tomorrow, is Bike Lab. You want to learn to fix your bike? How to keep it tuned up so it's there for you when you need it?
or maybe you know already, but you just need to borrow a bike-specific tool that you don't have. Well, come to the Bike Lab.
Almost every Saturday since 2004.
From 11:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m.
Here in Northampton at 12 Northern Avenue.
Come with your bike or your questions.
And your willing attitude.
Spare parts scavenger hunt every weekend.
Vengan al Bike Lab de Northampton, el taller de bicicleta. Aprende a arreglar tu bicicleta y a divertirte.
All repairs guaranteed to the end of the driveway.
Details are online at pedalpeople.coop. That's the Saturday Bike Lab at 12 Northern Avenue. They say freedom isn't free, but at the Bike Lab it is.
That's, yep, coming up Saturday, tomorrow, August 17th. Yes, there will be Bike Lab. Here's something coming up on Sunday, the 18th. It's, let's see, this is through my Western Mass surge, showing up for racial justice list. The Western Mass Coalition for Palestine, which Western Mass surge is a member of, will be participating in the nationwide coordinated actions called Not Another Bomb to put pressure on the Democratic Party to end the genocide of Palestinians. Join us for a rally at 300 State Street in Springfield at 1 p.m. on Sunday, August 18th. The goal of the action is to push the Biden-Harris administration and the Democratic Party to support an arms embargo and demand that Not Another Bomb be sent to Israel. You can find out more at the Western Mass Surge Facebook page or WMSURJ.com. That's, again, 300 State Street in Springfield, 1 p.m. this Sunday. Now, a word from Tina Turner.
Understand what's on my mind.
that song, I actually meant to connect with the previous interview with Gwen the Bud. And just thinking of residents of Northampton Housing Authority and management and relationships there. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm Ruthie. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! Coming up at 6. 5. Coming up at 5. Followed by Civil Politics at 6. And, Ultimate Frisbee in Haydenville, 6 p.m. That's not on Valley Free Radio. That's out in the field. Haydenville, Fairfield Ave, 6 p.m. every Friday for now. It's just pick up. And what else? Oh, here's another announcement I could make. This is from the Friends of Northampton Trails. Bikes for All. Bikes for All is a collaboration of area bike advocates whose mission is to get good, used bikes to children and families who might not otherwise be able to afford them. Bikes for All program still going strong. This year, volunteer mechanics have provided more than 50 bikes to neighbors. If you have a good used bicycle that you or a family member has outgrown, you could donate it to the Bikes for All program. But they want to see a picture of it first to see if it's something they could use. You could donate it to Bike Lab too, but my Bike Lab style is more like I'm more likely to like meet people at the Bike Lab who want a bike and work on a bike and fix it up together. I'm not like organized to fix bikes and give them away. But if you need help, if you need bike help and you can't make it to Bike Lab, feel free to get my contact information off the Bike Lab website. That's go to the Pedal People website and look for a Bike Lab. And hopefully I can help. Also, join the Friends of the Columbia Greenway Rail Trail for their annual fundraising ride. That's the 37th annual Great River Ride. I think that's you'll tour the hill towns of the Eastern Berkshires. I don't know where that's at. I was thinking it had something to do with the rail trail, maybe the rail trail extension through Southampton to Westfield, but I don't even know. All right. Well, thank you for listening today. As I said, Democracy Now! Comes up at 5 o'clock. And enjoy your life.